It's time to say goodnight to inefficient night storage heaters. Bulky, unattractive, with no precise control, leaving you boiling in the morning and rather chilly at night. So tune in to Fisher Future Heat, home heating systems that give you a steady, controllable supply of heat 24 hours a day. Search Fisher Future Heat today. Fisher Future Heat. The future is electric.
Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, I'm Tristan Riddell.
And I'm Matt Hansen.
And you're listening to the Nerd Party.
Talk nerdy to me.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello, everybody. This is episode 18 of the Nerd Party. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for downloading and listening. As we talked about in our last episode, we are growing and growing. We're getting more and more listeners. We're getting more and more fan interaction. And we just want to thank you so much for doing what you do, for subscribing to our channel and listening to us. It really means a lot. And we're getting a lot of great positive feedback on Twitter.
Yeah, this is slowly becoming the little podcast that could, and it's just, you know, it's as it grows and grows with each episode, I'm more and more astounded, so thank you all guys very much.
All right, well, today we are going to talk about, we're actually going to ditch our topic that we originally were going to have, and we're going to save that for next week, because, Matt, a lot of things have happened in the time that we've did our Oscar special, and...
That's the blessing and the curse of doing these shows bi-weekly, is because so much can happen in this day and age, especially in nerd news, so...
We're constantly getting newer and newer nerd news, and movie news, and comic book news, and TV news, and everything like that. And, I mean, not to mention that I just got done doing my House of Cards Season 3 marathon. And I started that late Friday night and finished it Saturday afternoon. And
this is how committed Tristan is. He went off all social media and cut off all technology until he went from episode 1 to the season finale of whatever season this is. Is it 3?
This is Season 3. Yeah, what it did was I deleted Instagram, Twitter, and Tumblr from my phone. And I had to work Friday because they dropped it early Friday morning. And I had to work that day. And so I didn't want any kind of spoilers because in today's culture, in today's instant social media culture, is that people just want to be first. It doesn't matter what it's in. They want to be first in something. And there's these internet people who are just, they take pride in taking a screen capture of a spoiler and putting it up online before anybody else. It gives them some sort of sick satisfaction.
Yeah, I'm planning, just so you know, I'm planning a similar blackout because, as you know, Tristan, one of my most anticipated films this summer is Avengers 2, Age of Ultron, and it is coming out a couple weeks earlier in everywhere but America. So, for those couple weeks, I may or may not be sparse because I'm really trying to avoid anything on that movie until I see it.
That always bugs me. I mean, like, I'm all for a movie not being American-centric because we are definitely in a worldwide economy today. But the thing is, it's an American-made movie.
Well, I had this talk last year where it normally doesn't bother me, but the fact that Captain America, the Winter Soldier, came out everywhere but America first, and that it's got Captain America in the title.
it's got Captain America in the title. And also, we had to deal with this with Star Trek Into Darkness as well.
Yeah, but I can understand that, because Star Trek is not at least an American-centric thing. This was a movie that had America in the title, and whose main cast member is profoundly American, and, you know.
You're very right in that. There's a little bit of irony in that, where it's you're like, it has America in the title. One thing about, just to go back on a media blackout, it's like as I just said, I was out Friday and Saturday. But the thing is, though, is that you and I were talking on Friday, and you were the one who told me that Leonard Nimoy died. You sent me a link to a news article, and I immediately went onto Twitter. I immediately installed it back on my phone because I wanted to see what my friends were doing. I wanted to see how the internet was reacting to his passing, and I've never been more proud of Twitter. I feel like things were like, I actually posted video of what my Twitter feed looked like when the news was announced of Leonard Nimoy's passing, because it was going so fast that I couldn't keep up. I couldn't read my Twitter feed because it was going so fast. And people were just saying, like, the thing is, like, people weren't wailing in the streets. They weren't being overdramatic. It was just positive tweet after positive tweet after positive tweet saying, we're going to miss you. You impacted my life. You gave us some great art. Thank you so much. It was all just filled with so much positivity. I really feel like the community came together and felt it together. What did you think? Well, like, where were you? How did you feel?
I was at work, and actually had just gotten, like, we had just had a little insight into my life. We had just gotten back from a potluck we had at work that day. And one of my Delta Quadrant co-hosts, I host the Delta Quadrant, as you do with To the Journey, we host Voyager podcast. My Delta Quadrant co-host is the one that first texted me and let me know the news, because I hadn't even heard it yet. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I went to Twitter and I saw all those posts that you were talking about. And, you know, what surprised me is that it continued throughout the whole day. Like, the whole day was a day of not really, well, we were mourning, of course. It's very sad. So, you know, they were positive, but they're all twinged with sadness. But what I really loved was that the whole day seemed to be dedicated to remembering Leonard Nimoy. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't get too much work done that day. And thankfully, there wasn't a lot of work to be done. You know, I got to share it with everybody. And what really struck me about this death in particular is that Larry Nemechek, I know you're probably familiar with him. You've talked to him at some point. He's
absolutely.
He's a major behind the scenes guy for a lot of Star Trek, if you don't know. He's done a lot of compendiums, talked to a lot of people, worked behind the sets, interviews. He made an excellent point on Twitter that I saw the other day, is that this is the first Star Trek cast member death, major Star Trek cast member death, where social media is a thing. Because DeForest Kelly died in 1999 when we didn't even have social media. Mm-hmm. James Doohan died in 2005, just before, you know, MySpace was taking off. But Leonard Nimoy, this is the first death that we've had post-Facebook and post-Twitter, post-Instagram generation.
And on top of that, Leonard Nimoy was an active Twitter user.
Yes, that too. So he you know, whether or not you like those movies, he was still around kicking in the latest last two Star Trek films. So he was still actively known.
Very much so. And like, and not only that, I mean, he was he, like, in the later years of his life, he was doing guest appearances on Fringe.
He was in that Bruno Mars music video.
He was in constantly in commercials still with Zachary Quinto.
Oh, have you seen, by the way, that's one of the first things I watched when I learned of the death, because I just wanted to see something happy. Mm-hmm. And there was that, I think it was an Audi commercial that he did with Zachary Quinto, and it was just the funniest thing.
It was adorable. It was awesome. And I mean, it's great when you see, you know, like, Star Trek alums do stuff together. And I saw one tweet from Jonathan Frakes, and it was the perfect tweet from him, where he said, it's like, Leonard Nimoy was the absolute best.
He said something like, rest in peace to the best first officer.
There you go. Yeah, that's what it was. Rest in peace to the best first officer, coming from my favorite first officer. And it was just a great send off, I think.
Yeah, I mean, everybody had something to say. What was really interesting was watching everybody who worked in Star Trek, whether or not they worked with Leonard Nimoy, if they just worked or were part of the franchise, everybody had something to say.
Yeah.
You know, Jerry Ryan, Patrick Stewart, the cast of the new films who are on Twitter, Zachary Quinto, Zoe Saldana. Just seeing the world react was really, really cool, and reaffirmed the faith that I had that, you know, with the advent of the new films, Star Trek has come back into the mainstream, and people are looking back on it as something fond and something beloved. So, you know, that was nice to see as well.
Yeah, it really was. And it was so great to see everybody share their personal stories about when they first saw Leonard Nimoy, or people who have met Leonard Nimoy, or people swapping stories of working with Leonard Nimoy, or meeting him and everything like that, or what they thought of his art, whether it was his poetry, his photography, his acting, movies, television. And it was just so great to see that online. And so many people were posting pictures of what he looked like when he was in the 60s, or how he looked today. And you actually sent me a picture.
Yeah.
And like, I was okay. Like, I was sad to begin with. Like, I was heartbroken. I was like, man, this is horrible. But we all saw this coming. But I didn't get weepy until you sent me that picture. How about you describe the what the picture is to the
I actually can't take credit for it, Tristan, because I saw it was one of the first Twitter things I saw when I logged onto Twitter after I heard the news, but I had to copy it because, man, does it just embody the loss that we all felt on Friday. And it's a picture of Spock's empty chair on the bridge from Wrath of Khan when we realize that he's not on the bridge, that he went down to sacrifice himself and die. So
it was just like when you sent that to me, I was just like, man, this is such a sad day. And this, you sent me the picture. I just had to put my head back and I was just like, oh my God.
Well, even worse, like later that day, have you seen the side by side picture of it's a picture of Kirk, Spock, McCoy and Scotty sitting in the briefing room from the original series. And then it's another side shot of Kirk just sitting by himself.
Yes, I have seen that photo. There's a person that I follow online. His name's Lee Sargent.
Yeah, I follow him too, actually.
We both follow him. He's a great guy, great person to talk to, and makes fantastic art. I mean, he makes a lot of geek art. It's very Star Trek and Star Wars centric, but he does a lot of other things too. And he has just a really unique and cool style. And he posted one online right after Spock's death, and it was Spock giving the "Live Long and Prosper" salute, and yards behind him, much smaller, was McCoy and Scotty, waiting for
or
him.
Something. Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah. And I was just like, oh my God. And I messaged him. I was like, why did you just do that to me? Why did you? Like, it just hit me so hard.
There's that. There's people have screenshot that one part of, I think it's from the Tholian web, where it's Spock, McCoy, and Scotty having the drink together.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Very, very sad. But again, we do this in mourning and in celebration. I mean, I don't know about you, but I went back and watched some of my favorite Spock-centric episodes and or movies and really had a good time looking back through his career.
Yeah, you posted a retweet of someone saying, when you go home tonight, don't watch Wrath of Khan, watch Search for Spock. And I took that to heart and I was like, you know what, that's a great idea. Because it's not his sacrifice, it's him coming back, it's him being reborn, and it's just...
And that movie is about him. He may not be in it. Leonard Nimoy himself may not be in it till the end, but that movie is very much about Spock.
Very much so. And so when I went home that day, and the first thing I did was pop in my Blu-ray of The Search for Spock, and it was just, it's what I needed to do, and it was great, and I felt connected in another fashion.
I had watched that, and I watched, I'm sure you've seen it. If you're a Star Trek fan and you haven't seen it, seek it out. I saw Search for Spock, and I saw the Futurama episode, the Star Trek Futurama episode.
That's such a great episode. It's called Where No Fan Has Gone Before. And Futurama is a great series, and there's so many Star Trek references all throughout Futurama, but there's one episode in particular that's completely dedicated to the Star Trek original cast, and Leonard Nimoy is a highlight. He's kind of the main focus of the episode. And
they were able to get to every at that point surviving cast member of TOS.
That's right. And like they did such, like, there's a moment where Shatner makes out with Leela, and it's so in character and so perfect. And it's seriously, like, even if you're not a Futurama fan, if you're not an animation fan, watch it if you're a Star Trek fan, because it's totally 100% worth it.
Yeah. So I don't know how much longer you want to spend on this, Tristan, but, you know, it was very sad, but I loved the togetherness that it wrought among not only Star Trek fans, but kind of the world stopped as a whole to recognize him, so.
Yeah, I really do think that, and not only, I know how you said it was an all-day thing, and I completely agree with you about how the whole day was spent remembering Nimoy, but I really do feel like the whole weekend was too, because on Sunday, on the day of this recording, almost every other channel that I flipped to had some sort of special for Nemo, not just a mention, a special, like a tribute.
Yeah.
And it was perfect to see it on ABC, CBS, and Fox, and cable channels and everything like that. People like, and it's just like, young people know who Nimoy is. Older people know who Nimoy is. It's the world. He has so integrated himself into our lexicon and into our culture that even if you're not a Star Trek fan, you know who Mr. Spock is and you know who Leonard Nimoy is.
Yeah, well, if you think about it, people who don't know Star Trek at all know who Mr. Spock is. I mean, if you say the word Star Trek to people who have no idea, the two people that you're going to get are probably Kirk and Spock. And that's why I think that, you know, the only other well, maybe others among Star Trek fans, but I think no other death will ring as big as this until, you know, William Shatner eventually passes.
And also, let's lay off Shatner a little bit. I mean, he's been getting some heat recently in the media for not attending Nimoy's funeral.
Oh, but I've been following him on Twitter, and he was saying he was doing some charity event and he couldn't get out of it.
Let's remember this for next time, is that even if he didn't have some sort of charity event, like, we all deal with death differently, and we need to not try to guilt someone online for not attending a funeral. I mean, there was when Chris Farley died, David Spade was his absolute best friend in the entire world. David Spade could not make it to his funeral, not because he was out of town or because he missed his flight or something like that. He could not go. He could not bring himself to go. So let's all remember that no matter what the reason is that everybody deals with death differently.
Absolutely.
I just want to make that statement. I mean, is it going to change anything? Maybe not. But it might change your perspective a little bit if you consider that.
Yeah, I mean, it's no place to judge. And we don't even know. We can't even say what the man's feeling at this point. I'm sure he's mourning just like the rest of us. So I choose to let everybody grieve in their own way.
Exactly. And it's none of our business.
Yeah, and it's none of our business. And we certainly have grieved in our own way by doing all these memorials and tributes and watching these mm-hmm. episodes and movies. So, you know, we all handle death in a very different way.
All right. Well, Leonard Nimoy was a great artist, and he was when you say artist, you mean it with Leonard Nimoy. He was an artist in multiple different ways, and a lovely man, and a fantastic all-around good guy from everyone that I've ever heard who met him, and everyone who's had interactions with him has nothing but good things to say.
And I will say, before we move off this subject, Tristan, if you're a Leonard Nimoy fan and you want to hear about this man's life from him, from the man himself, he wrote two autobiographies, one of which, the latest one, was called I Am Spock, mostly about his Star Trek career, but a lot of it, you know, about his life growing up and what led him to become an actor. And mm-hmm. that was written in 95, so you have to think about where he was in 95. But
Try to get the audiobook, because the two books that you're talking about, is the first one is I Am Not Spock, and the second one is I Am Spock, and he reads his own book on the audiobook.
Yeah, he did. What I was trying to get is he did make an audiobook for I Am Spock. Seek it out, because I actually bought it way back in the day, the cassette tapes for it, so I actually have it physically here in my room. It is one of the most fascinating autobiographies, and he's so engrossed in it. And like I said, there's no better way to look back on his life than by listening to him talk about it. So seek that out.
And I do believe he did an audiobook for both.
I'm not sure if he did an audiobook for both. He might have. I know Audible only has the second one. The first one was way back in the day because I Am Not Spock was published in 1975.
Yeah, and also for those of you out there who are like who may not know the whole story behind I Am Not Spock. Like, he describes it in the book I Am Spock, where he says he's like, I was never ashamed to be Spock. I was never ashamed of, you know, being in Star Trek or anything like that. It was a publisher's idea, you know, to put that in there and just talk about my many different things. He's like, people took it as a way, kind of like Shatner's Get a Life segment on SNL, and it wasn't like that at all.
The nice thing, I'm kind of previewing I Am Spock for you guys, but the nice thing is he talks about how that decision to name the first book that way really bit him in the butt. Yeah. And he talks about how he if he went back, he wouldn't do it that way. And that's why he felt compelled to write that second autobiography. And he really was in a different place in his life, because let's mm-hmm. not forget, I Am Not Spock, that was published in 75. He had only done the original series at that point. And you know, it was iconic, or it was getting iconic, because it was in the middle of the 70s. But, you know, very different to where he's ended up in 1995, post-movies and post-Star Trek becoming a mainstream phenomena. So, you know, he's in a different place at both points in his life. And I just think listening to that follow-up book is, you know, to pardon the pun, fascinating.
Yeah. So long story short, find him if you can. And I did just look it up, and he does do an audiobook for both. I have both. So I'll make sure to give that to you. All right. Well, on to our next segment. In our next bet, we're going to be changing gears a little bit. We're going to go into movies, specifically Marvel, which definitely your wheelhouse. And as many of you know, and if you're listening to this podcast, you are a nerd, you are a geek, and you should know this. And that is this has been a long time coming and a lot of mystery behind it. A lot of people saying, no, it's never going to happen in a million years. A lot of people saying, no, it's totally in the works. And the people who said it's in the works were right. Spider-Man is coming to the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
In a way that I don't really understand, because the press release for this is very, very ambiguous. But the impression that I get is that, yes, he's going to be in the Cinematic Universe. They're starting over again, so they're scrapping the Amazing Spider-Man universe. Mm-hmm. They're starting again. They're supposed to premiere him in a Marvel movie prior to this new 2017 solo film that they're setting up for him. And everybody's speculating that he's going to be in Captain America Civil War because he's such an integral part of that storyline. However, you know, there's a couple of things that I found interesting. And one of them is that in that press release, it says he's going to be part of the cinematic universe, but the films that he's going to be in are going to be joint ventures between Marvel and Sony. And it, yes. And it says that, you know, here's the interesting thing. It says that Sony gets final creative control, but here's the thing. With the way that, especially Amazing Spider-Man 2 was received, I think that sort of clause is put in there to make it seem like Sony's not completely surrendering to Marvel. But I really do think that if Marvel wants to take the character a certain way, I don't think that Sony's going to say no. They're not in that position.
That's pretty much how it's stated. It's very blunt. It's Spider-Man's still going to be owned by Sony. They're still going to produce and distribute the movies, and they still own the creative rights and the merchandising rights. But they're going to be making the movies in conjunction with Marvel, and Marvel's going to be taking the creative direction. They're going to be like, even though like Sony's fronting the bill, producing wise, Marvel is going to be producing from a creative standpoint. And they're going to, like, help find the director. They're going to find the actors. They're going to do, the creative aspects of what it takes to make a movie. And Sony put that clause in there, like, oh, yeah, you can do all the creative stuff, but we're still going to be able to have yay or nay
final
at
say.
The end. Final say. And I think you're absolutely right in saying that they wouldn't do this if they didn't trust Marvel.
Well, they wouldn't be doing this if they didn't think they needed Marvel. Let's be perfectly blunt. I mean, like, The Amazing Spider-Man 2 wasn't a bomb, but it certainly didn't make the money that they thought it would. And, Sony has gone through a whole bunch of really bad press in the last 6 months with the hack and everything. So they need to rebuild their public image. So I very much doubt that if Marvel wants to take the character in a certain direction in one of their films, they're going to say no. Just because of the track record that Marvel Studios has at this point.
See, this is a win-win for Sony because The main thing that they wanted to keep was merchandising rights. Like, Spider-Man is the highest selling superhero character in the world when it comes to merchandising.
And not to mention, it's even with The Amazing Spider-Man 2, it is still one of their most profitable movie franchises.
Absolutely, and they'd never want to let that go. They don't give a damn about who does the creativity stuff. They don't care who, like, writes the script or who directs it or, like, who makes it what it is. All they want is a profitable franchise, and Marvel has proven to do that.
But they still want people to come see it. You say they don't care about, who has creative and who writes and who directs it. I think that's been true up until now.
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that, like, yes, they want it to be good, of course, but, like, the only way you can have a profitable franchise is if you make a good movie.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying is that Marvel has proven to do that. And so they still get all the they reap all the benefits for Marvel's hard work.
And really, it's Marvel is doing a lot of the work, but really, this is no risk to Marvel either.
No, none.
Because they're not fronting the bill. They're just writing the story.
Right. I mean, like they still have. They still have their reputation invested in this but the thing is, though, is if this movie bombs, like if this standalone Spider-Man film bombs, like Sony will say, like, well, Marvel, you know, like Sony can say Marvel screwed it up, and Marvel can say, yeah, you had creative control. You nixed our ideas. You didn't let us do what we wanted to do. Either way, like, people can blame the other person.
Right, and I listen to a lot of, you know, YouTube pundits, as I'll put it, talk about this this deal, and really, a lot of them came to the conclusion that although this is probably going to benefit Sony, a lot of them came to the conclusion that Marvel Studios clearly is the most benefit from this, or has conceded the least amount for this deal to go forward.
Oh yeah, I don't think they've really conceded anything, because it's just like, you know, like Spider-Man is a Marvel character, and we're just talking about film rights and everything like that. It's just with, you know, like, it's a win-win for Marvel, because they get to, like, somebody else is fronting the bill. They get to do what they do best, and that's tell stories and make great movies. And they get to have another character to play with in their universe.
Yeah. The other aspect that I thought when I heard the story break is that I was happy for Marvel, because obviously they get someone else to play around with and use in their films. But at the same time, I was never one of those people that was clamoring for this to happen, because I thought the Marvel Cinematic Universe was doing just fine without Spider-Man. I think we had this discussion way back when we were talking about the Phase 3 lineup, is that if this were to happen, it would be because Sony needs Marvel. Marvel doesn't need Sony.
Yeah, you've said that on multiple occasions. I think you're absolutely right. I think Marvel's doing just fine without Spider-Man. And if something happened tomorrow where Sony's just like, you know what, screw you, we changed our minds, I don't think Marvel would suffer in the least.
They would wash their hands of the whole thing, and they would move their slate back to the way it was.
Exactly. And that's another thing to talk about, is that they moved, I think, what, Black Panther and
Black Panther, Thor, so the 2017 films.
Yeah.
So that was Black Panther, Thor, and Captain Marvel. They kept Avengers Infinity War Part 1 and 2 the same. Oh, okay. And Inhumans. Forgot about Inhumans. So that kind of... My only concern was that how does that bode for the evolving story? Because clearly what's been happening with these Marvel movies, and even if it's not clear at the time when you watch the present movie, they all reference each other, and they all build off of something that came in the last. So, you know... The stories themselves, I think, are structured to, you know, benefit the next one, if you know what I mean. Like Age of Ultron. We couldn't have Age of Ultron, the story that we're going to have, I imagine, without the Winter Soldier, in coming where the Winter Soldier was. So obviously Marvel is going to have to readjust the story that they wanted to tell to accommodate the new slate. And I'm hoping that they'll be able to do that okay. I hope they don't have to start from scratch. But at the same time, they've yet to really show me that they're haphazard in their planning. I think they're going to adjust just fine.
Well, yeah, I think they're going to do just fine, because I think if Spider-Man is in Civil War, which I think he needs to be in Civil War. I mean, like, it's just...
And the other question, too, is to what degree is he going to be in Civil War?
And that's what I was going to get to, is that I feel like the timing is perfect, where they announce that they're going to have a Civil War movie, and then they get the rights for Spider-Man. Yeah, that's when you do some rewrites. You don't need to do an incredible rewrite because the Russo brothers know what they're doing. But I feel like you need to take advantage of that. He needs to be in Civil War, and I feel like he needs to be a big part of a specific part of Civil War. Now, you didn't read the comic books, but Spider-Man is a big part of the overall story of Civil War.
And I've done some research where, like, you know, he starts off on the pro-registration side. He ends up with Captain America on the anti-registration side.
Right.
I get that he's sort of the chess piece that both Tony Stark and Steve Rogers are trying to fight over.
Yes, and the thing is, though, is that I don't think he needs to be that big of a piece in the Civil War. But no. I think if in Civil War... if they do use him, it shouldn't just be a tag at the end. I think what it should be is, it should be, okay, well, one guy steps out and said, like, and is the first to be vocal about it besides the two opposing forces. They say, okay, yeah, there's this guy in New York who's making waves, and it goes by the name of Spider-Man, and then, you know, like something like that.
The interesting thing, though, is that back when they were announcing their Phase 3 lineup, and they weren't privy to the fact that they were talking about getting Spider-Man, they've already started setting up Black Panther to be in that position, because if we remember from the Phase 3 lineup, yeah, Chadwick Boseman was announced as Black Panther, and they said that he was going to be in Civil War, and a lot of people speculated at the time that he was going to take the place of Spider-Man's role, and... it looks like from these previews from Age of Ultron that they're also setting up aspects of Black Panther with Andy Serkis's character and a couple of the other random shots. So it's already been, you know, Black Panther has always already been in play.
And I think they're going to share some of those duties. I think Black Panther and Spider-Man are going to share that role in Civil War. I really do.
Makes me wonder because, well, Civil War, I mean, it's going to be a big solo movie. It's not even that much of a solo movie anymore, although I still believe the people when they say it's going to be Captain America-centric. But at this point, we're handling Steve Rogers, Tony Stark, possibly Black Widow and or Hawkeye, you know, Falcon, Winter Soldier, because we're not done with him yet. You know, and now having to introduce into the mix Spider-Man and Black Panther.
I honestly believe that, like, I think it's going to be, I think that Falcon is going to take a backseat.
Like, we know he's in it, because
Mackie's already said he's in it. But I think he's going to take a, like, I don't think he's going to be anywhere near, he's not going to be in it anywhere near as much as he was in Captain America 2. And I feel like it's going to be Captain America and Scarlett Johansson dynamic, the Black Widow dynamic, and then you're going to have Iron Man as the pseudo antagonist, and then it's going to be Black Panther and Spider-Man be kind of pawns. That's how I see it. That's what I think it's going to be.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting. Like, that movie, I'm really excited for Age of Ultron, but I'm also really interested to see how this Civil War is going to play out, because it's becoming as big as an Avengers film.
I know. I'm more excited about Civil War than I am Age of Ultron.
But I'm excited for both. I'll just put it that way.
Oh, yeah, me too. But I think the intrigue of Civil War is where kind of my wheelhouse.
Well, because we don't know where it's going yet. We know all these major players are going to be in it, but we have no idea what the story is going
to
be.
Right. I know. I love the mystery. But before we move on to our next segment, we need to discuss this, and we need to talk about Peter Parker. Okay, there's a lot of rumors going around.
Oh, are we gonna do? We're gonna hit the racial thing, aren't we?
We're gonna talk about the racial thing, but not that much. You guys know where Matt and I stand when it comes to changing race in characters in comic books. We've seen it done well, and we have seen that done since the '60s, folks, and it's been done well. And so we have no problem with that. But what I'm gonna talk about first is Peter Parker. In the release, they talked about how the company is interested to see what more they can do with Peter Parker. Okay, well, people said, okay, well, that nails it. It's going to be Peter Parker. That might not be necessarily true, because around the rumor mill from quote-unquote trusted sources, so this is all just rumors, is that it may not be Peter Parker. And so people are thinking, well, if it's not Peter Parker, then who's it going to be? Well, there's another Spider-Man out there, and he goes by the name of Miles
Morales.
Morales, thank you. And he is half Black, half Hispanic. And so a lot of people aren't okay with that. Now, some people aren't okay with it because they don't want a person of color Spider-Man. And there's other people who are not okay with it because they don't want a non-Peter Parker Spider-Man. Now, I can understand the non-Peter Parker Spider-Man aspect because people love that character. But I can understand the change in their race, because I don't think it matters. But I do understand, like I said, I do understand people saying it, that they want Peter Parker.
Because
now, what do you think?
When you say Spider-Man, people just think Peter Parker. It's the same way that when people think of Batman, they think of Bruce Wayne, not whoever the Batman Beyond guy was. You would know that name more than I would.
It's a Tim... Crap. It's Tim. I can't remember his name.
But you know what I mean? Like, people think of Bruce Wayne. They don't think of the other people who have been Batman.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Is like, there in the comic books, there has been a lot of people who have been Batman. And not just in Batman Beyond, but like in the comic books, they've been like they've worn his suit. And,
yeah, I know. That was just the first one that came to mind.
Oh, no. And it's a good one, though. And his name is not Tim. It's Terry McGinnis. I'm a bad Batman fan. Terry McGinnis is the guy who played Batman Beyond. But yeah, like, a lot of people have held the mantle of Batman, and I was actually going to use that as an example, because I was all for, like, this is why I think people just need to calm down and let the cinematic universe do what they want to do, because after The Dark Knight Rises, I was 100% fine with the next generation of Batman not being Bruce Wayne. I was like, if there is another Batman movie, I am A-okay with it not being Bruce Wayne, because it would give us something different. And I'm a huge Batman fan. I am a huge Bruce Wayne fan, but I'm okay with seeing Batman as somebody else for a little bit. And so when people get all up in arms about Spider-Man not being Peter Parker, I just don't get it, because we have 5 Peter Parker movies, not including the ones way back when. And so we have 5 modern Peter Parker movies. It's okay to do something new because it's not forever. And I know that people are obsessed with Peter Parker, and there's a wealth of stories with Peter Parker. And the only other criticism that's not race that I can understand is that Miles Morales hasn't been around that long, so he doesn't have a wealth of stories like Peter Parker does.
Yeah, and here's the thing, and I'm going to say this about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and I'm going to say this about comic book movies as a whole, even the ones that I don't necessarily care for. There's comic books and there's comic book movies. And people get so upset when the comic book movies are not like the comic books. And even though I'm not an avid comic book reader, I mean, I picked up one every now and then. I've seen the dialogue and the appearances of certain things the way that they are in the books. You can't. There's no way you can do a direct translation from book to film, because either the costumes would look weird, they would look silly. I don't care if they're authentic. They, you know, things that are authentic on the page don't look good in real life. Just like the things that they say on the page would, if you said that in real life, you would be, you know, an a-hole. It would just sound really corny. Like, no one speaks like that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So, you know. My policy with comic book movies is do what you got to do, and especially when it comes to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I'm just, with Kevin Feige, I'm just like, go make.
Yes, like let them do what they do best, and I agree with you. I agree with you 99.9%, because the only time that I've ever seen a direct translation work perfectly is Sin City. That's the only time, but that is a special case.
Yeah, and that's special. And people would debate you there on something like Watchmen, but I think that the from what I've heard from other people, the direct translation in that film actually hurt it more than helped it. But
I think those are two very solid cases where Sin City worked, and even though I love the Watchmen film and the comic, I think that it was pulled off much better in Sin City than it was in Watchmen. I feel like an adaptation would have worked better than a translation, and I think you're absolutely right. But yeah, it's just so where are you with the Peter Parker thing? Like, here's the two things. Do you care if it's Peter Parker or somebody else? And also, do you care if it's a white man or somebody else?
No and no. I mean, at this point, Marvel's earned my trust enough where I just, like I said, Kevin Feige, go make, go cast, go do whatever you need to do.
Yeah.
To just make sure that the story's good. This is also why, like, I never got the obsession in arms over the fact that in that first X-Men film, people were losing their minds because Bryan Singer put them in the black leather outfits instead of the spandex.
I had forgotten that. That's so silly. That's so friggin' stupid.
But it happened. It happened. And there are people who are still angry about that.
Well, people are pissed because Daniel Craig was blonde.
Well, and now, of course, we've touched on this before. People are pissed that Human Torch is now black.
I know. It's just, it's silly. It's silly. We've talked about it. These are comic book characters. They're not historical characters, so they can change and it can be fine. And they can change back in the next iteration, because we're in that mode where we're just around the bend for the next iteration of these kind of comic book movies. And I'm with you, Matt. Like, I'm with you 100%. I don't care on both counts. It's like, let it be Peter. If it's Peter Parker, fine. If it's not Peter Parker, fine. If he's a white man, sure. If he's not, if he's Asian, if he's black, if he's Hispanic, if he's mixed, whatever. That's fine. If they want to do something different, go do something different. I'm fine with doing something different. The thing that I care about most, the thing that I absolutely don't want to see again, I don't give a damn about seeing Peter Parker or whatever Spider-Man it is in high school. I don't want to see him in school. I'm tired of it.
They did say that they want him high school age, but the thing that I liked about Marvel and what I've heard from Marvel is that we're not doing the origin story again. This is already going to be a Spider-Man that's already come into existence.
I hope so.
That's the way to go. If you're going to have him in high school, at least already have him be Spider-Man, because in the last 10 years, we've already seen that story twice.
Right, in 10 years, folks.
And not to mention, the second time we saw it, it's 2015 now, the second time we saw the origin story was only 3 years ago in 2012.
Right. It's like, people are smart enough, like, we get it, like, even if they just want to do a silly exposition scene that lasts 5 minutes, fine, let's do that.
And I think Feige knows that. I think if we're going to see it done at all. You remember Incredible Hulk with Edward Norton and Liv Tyler? Mm-hmm. Remember how they retold his origin story in the opening credits in like a montage?
Yep.
I think that's how it's going to be if we ever see it.
I hope so. I hope so. I think people are smart enough to realize that now.
But you know, if it works, great. If it doesn't work, you know, we just discount it and we try again. We're even in this day and age where we can pretend that some films don't exist. Speaking of which, that translates nicely into our next topic.
Well, actually, I'm glad that you brought that up, because you'd think that that would be a good segue, but we actually just heard from that director that that's not the case.
Well, I've heard different things, and the way that this director is, I'm looking at the word choice very, very carefully.
Yeah. Okay. Here's the thing. Like, so the people at home listening, what we're talking about is, as you know, Matt and I are huge Alien fans. We are huge Alien
fans.
And
what you may not know is when we did our Alien episode back in October, Tristan and I were like, oh, sure, we can do an Alien episode, because clearly another Alien movie is never going to happen.
But yet it is going to happen, and it's going to happen from a great director, or let me rephrase that, a director with great vision and a great perspective, because he's made some great movies and he's made some not so great movies. And I feel that is Neil Blomkamp, or however you pronounce it.
I think Sigourney Weaver calls him something different.
Blomkamp or something like that.
Neil B.
Yeah, Neil B.
Director of District 9 and Elysium. And I know a lot of people don't like Elysium, but what I like about at least his two films is that however you feel about them, I don't think either are outright failures, like complete wastes of time failures.
No, and at least they have a verve, they have a style, they're very stylistic, and they have an aesthetic that's very tangible, and I really appreciate that. And I think that's something that the Alien films lost a little bit towards the end. But here's the thing is that for those of you who don't know, Neil Blomkamp released a whole bunch of art online, on his Instagram account and on his Twitter account.
I have to ask you, Tristan, I know where you're going and I hate to interrupt you, but think back, because we're movie fans. Is this the first time a movie's been launched based on the hype around some person's doodles? Because that's basically what this is.
I don't think it was the first time. It was definitely not the first time. It's the first time that we've publicly seen it, because people will shop things around all the time based off of a sketch or based off of a series of paintings or something in a sketchbook or something like that, where they say, like, I don't have a script, all I have is an idea, and here's what I think it would look like.
Well, the difference, I guess, is, so the backstory is Neil Blomkamp posted these images, I think it was to his Instagram.
It was, right? Instagram and Twitter, yeah.
Yeah, and basically what these images were are, as an Alien fan, and in particular an Aliens fan, I love that second movie so much, are some of the most interesting and compelling, what do you call them, storyboard art, or I guess for lack of a better term.
Like concept art.
Concept art, that's the word I was looking for. It's the most interesting concept art I've ever seen. So basically, there's images of Sigourney Weaver as Ripley, as she looks now. I think he did a very good job of drawing Sigourney Weaver the way she kind of is now. She's a little bit more aged, the face is kind of the same, and, you know, a number of different images. We've seen her, I think, is it supposed to be the space jockey suit?
No, it's what it is like, let's get this concise though. Let's get this concise down, and then we'll speculate. And so,
take it
like,
away.
Like as you said, like we see Sigourney Weaver as Ripley, but we also see Michael Biehn.
I was building up to that.
Yeah, they're fighting together.
Michael Biehn is scarred the way he would have been had his character lived in Aliens.
Absolutely. And we also see a lot of alien tech, like in a hangar, and being dissected and analyzed. And the two of them are running around and fighting and trying to figure out what's going on. And we also see an organic mech suit that Sigourney is wearing. And if you know anything about District 9 and Elysium, they are, like, Neil Blomkamp is very much about mech suits and enhancing the body with technology. And so we definitely see some of that in these concept drawings, and they're beautiful and they're gorgeous. And what happened was he released them online, and Fox noticed them, reached out to him and said, we want this to happen.
As did the world, because, like, it was before even Fox talked to him about it. Like, he just released them, and they were like, we were all like, what are these random images of Aliens concept art with Sigourney Weaver and Michael Biehn? These are the coolest things that we have ever seen in the past decade.
And because Michael Biehn was in the mix, it would only make sense if it was in between Aliens and Alien 3. And the reason why he made this is because he was working with Sigourney Weaver on Chappie, his latest movie. And so while working with Sigourney Weaver, he said that he got inspired to make this art, and he did. And then Fox said, let's make this movie. And Neil said, okay. And here's the thing, is that he said that he wants it to be a genetic sibling to Aliens. And so all of us thought, okay, well, that's going to erase Alien 3 and Alien Resurrection. But here's the thing. I just read this off of Allosin.
I know what you're going to say, and I'm going to tell you why I still think that the earlier statement's in play.
Okay, all right. He says, my favorites are the first two movies, so I want to make a film that's connected to Alien and Aliens, he told Allosin. That's my goal. I'm not trying to undo Alien 3 or Alien Resurrection. I just want it to be connected to Alien 1 and 2.
Yeah, notice the word choice that he uses there. I'm not trying to undo Alien Resurrection or Alien 3. I'm trying to make it connected to the first two. Mm-hmm. So, to me, and I could be totally wrong, do not take my speculation as what's going to happen. Okay. But to me, because of that word choice, I think I've coined the term on this podcast, Tristan, Abrams Singer reboot in honor of Star Trek 2009 and X-Men Days of Future Past, using their reboots and time travel and interdimensional travel to alter and or erase or undo mm-hmm. previous films in the series. I don't think that – so what I took that to mean is I don't think we're getting that kind of reboot or restart with this film. I think it's just going to kindly omit – those two films. By omitting them, it's not undoing them, it's just kind of quietly brushing them to the side.
I think you're walking a fine line on
I think so is Blomkamp, because I've seen him say different things in different interviews.
I think whether it's something that disregards Alien 3 and Alien Resurrection or somehow fits in between it, I think we're going to get a great story, and the story that we all deserved after Aliens.
And I think that's the case, because either way, even if it doesn't end up discounting, if somehow they try to work with that crazy continuity, maybe it's being done by a filmmaker who I believe actually gives a damn. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And really a studio who now gives a damn.
Right.
Because I've talked about this on previous shows, but I really think that 20th Century Fox has turned around in the last 10 years. Back like, you know, around 2006, 2007, Fox movies kind of were just poison. I mean, if it was made by Fox, I kind of stayed away from it. And, you know, that seems odd to say about one particular studio, but they just weren't releasing material at the time that I thought was put a lot of love and care into it, as was evidenced by, like, such major franchise films as X-Men The Last Stand, X-Men Origins, Fantastic Four 2, et cetera, et cetera. It just seemed more about churning things out rather than actually making a good story. Then something happened around 2010, 2011. And I know you don't like First Class as much, but I felt like First Class was more of an attempt to try to get back to what the original two X-Men films were going for. It was trying to get back to that vibe. How successful it was, you have to admit, it was more successful than 3 and 4. And then with this last year, especially 2014, was a very, very good year for Fox, franchise-wise and stylistically-wise, because you had Gone Girl, and then we also had, you know, X-Men Days of Future Past and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. And I think this is a studio who, whoever's under this new management now, really cares about franchise films and really cares about their artistic integrity. And I think that bodes well for this new Blomkamp Alien film.
I think you're absolutely right on every count there. And I think it definitely is it's a different kind of Fox, and you get a new studio runner every couple of years, but I think it's definitely under good management, like you said. But let's talk about the artistic side a little bit. Let's talk about how this would work. So if it was in between, let's say it discounted Alien 3 and Alien Resurrection, which, even though I liked Alien 3, I'm fine with that, because it doesn't actually, that's what people don't understand, it doesn't actually erase the film. You can still get your Blu-ray and watch it. Yeah, it's fine, folks.
You're fine with discharging Resurrection. If you go back and listen to that film, I'm fine with discharging 3.
Right. And so, like, it's fine, guys. Like, if they disregard it, it's fine. We just get a different kind of story. It's just a different perspective. That's fine. And so the thing is, though, is that they're in suspension. And so the only thing that I can think about is if they explain the way Sigourney Weaver's age and Michael Biehn's age is like, oh, there was like a crack in the glass, and so we aged a little bit slower than
it's sci-fi. You know, whatever. If it's one of those explanations, like, I have kind of a rule where if they're in the setup of a movie, I give the movie its setup, and whatever MacGuffin or whatever thing you need to pull out of your butt to make it make sense, okay, fine, I'll give you that.
Exactly, and that's what I'm saying is that, like, they just have to tech the tech and explain that away, and then you have your story. But here's the thing, Matt, and this is what I'm asking about you. This is what I'm asking from you. Is if they try to do some sort of crazy thing, like, let's take Blomkamp literally here, where he says, I'm not trying to undo Alien 3, Alien Resurrection. What on earth could he possibly do in order to wedge a movie between Aliens and Alien 3?
That I don't know. And here's the thing. When I saw that artwork or at that con, and I'm making a lot of assumptions here. So I'm basing this off the assumption that...
Oh, we all are.
Here's the assumption I'm basing this off of. I'm basing the assumption off of that artwork is what's going to be in the film. Otherwise, why make that artwork? Because I think he has some sort of story in mind, or at least some sort of concept in mind.
Oh, absolutely.
In that artwork, and I don't know how I got this from artwork, but this is just the impression that I get. The Ripley that's in that artwork does not look like Ripley 8 from Resurrection. She doesn't stand the way that Ripley 8 does. She doesn't give off the same vibe that Ripley 8 does.
Hair is different.
The hair is different. She very much reminds me of the way Ripley was at the end of Aliens. So that's why I'm basing... I don't know. The answer to your question is I don't know how they would put it in. I don't think it's going to be clones. I don't think it's going to be a clone of Hicks, because if they clone Hicks, why is he burned?
Exactly. And the only way that I could think of it, working in this way by keeping the continuity is that... They would have a mission in between where, okay, they got picked up and they got released and they got unfrozen or out of stasis or whatever, and then they do their mission, and then they make it back into the same ship and had to go back into stasis, and then they have Alien 3. But the only way that that wouldn't work is because of their age.
Yeah, like I said, you can't have that wouldn't play, because Sigourney Weaver now, you know, she looks great, don't get me wrong. But she doesn't look like 1992 Sigourney Weaver that was in Alien 3. No. So the answer to your question is I don't know how you do this with Alien 3 and Resurrection intact, but maybe he knows.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, like, I'm sure he's smarter than us when it comes to the Alien franchise.
But when I looked at that concept art, I said, that's not the Ripley clone, and that's definitely Hicks as he was.
Absolutely. That is, like, Hicks. Michael Biehn is Hicks. Now let's hope that Michael Biehn is smart enough to reprise his role.
I think he will, because he's had a very checkered past with Alien 3. He doesn't like Alien 3. Wanted to be in Alien 3. So, and he's not doing too much now. I can't see them not reaching out to him and at least seeing if he's interested, and I can't see him not being interested.
Let's hope so.
We already, and it seems like, you know who's, well, honestly, the more... the harder one to get for these Alien films has always been Sigourney Weaver. It's always been a task to get her to sign on for these films, each one of their sequels. And, you know, each time they had to have some conditions in place. But actually, what feels different about this film versus, like, the negotiations they had to bring her back for 3 and 4 is that she actually seems really excited to do this one.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I think she likes Neil. She likes working with him, and I think they talked about the concept together, so I think she's on board with the concept. And if they can give her the right paycheck and the right circumstances, I think she'll do it.
And she's been talking for years, and I take it with a grain of salt, but she's been talking for years about how if there was ever the right opportunity to go back to Ripley, she would consider doing it.
Absolutely. All right, well, that is all of our speculations on Spider-Man and Aliens and everything in between, and this is just a nerd heaven for us because we're so excited about what's going to happen in the future, because so many cool things are coming out, and so we want to hear from you. Email us at contact@thenerdparty.com. Go to our website, go to thenerdparty.com, and there you can find out everything you need to know about our episodes and all of our previous episodes. And find me on Twitter. You can find me at The Insane Robin, and talk to me about what you like about the show, what you'd like to hear us talk about on the show. Matt, where can we find you on Twitter?
You can find me at mhanson0207, Hanson's with an E. And you can find both of us on our Facebook page, which will link you to our Tumblr page. So,
absolutely. And we want to thank you for subscribing, for liking, for listening, and talking to us. And we are so excited for you to interact with us, and we are so glad that you're liking the show, and we will see you next week.
Coming up,
next week.
If during the new year we happen to want to change our symbol, then of course we'd have to build a new model. At the moment, this ordinary piece of artwork is being looked at by a television camera. But the magic comes when the picture from that camera is fed into this device with its control box. So with this device, you can instantly try out different ideas. It'll be used in television programs and adverts where the artist wants three-dimensional, solid-looking images.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Time to say goodnight to inefficient night storage heaters. Bulky, unattractive, with no precise control, leaving you boiling in the morning and rather chilly at night. So tune in to Fisher Future Heat, home heating systems that give you a steady, controllable supply of heat 24 hours a day. Search Fisher Future Heat today. Fisher Future Heat. The future is electric.